This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Good evening and welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America, your source for Pan-African news and world developments. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington, and coming up on Africa News Tonight.
In places like Lesotho and Zambia, where you have a significant presence of Chinese expats, you know, in Uganda and other places, there's a sense that they're displacing African labor.
That's Paul Nantula, a specialist in Africa-China ties at the Africa Center for Strategic Studies in Washington. We'll have full details on this story coming up. Also, Zimbabwe's main opposition hits a brick wall 5 days before elections. South African authorities struggle to control an upsurge in violence in the minibus tax industry. We'll have these stories and more ahead on Africa News Tonight. Our top story is 5 days before Zimbabwe's elections and the main opposition has hit a brick wall in getting its demands addressed. Today, the executive members within the opposition met to consider a way forward. Reporter Kuzayi Zvinovashi has details.
Today's press briefing by MDC Alliance presidential candidate Nelson Chamisa took place hours later than scheduled. The MDC party secretary general, Douglas Monzora, calmed the frustrated journalists by telling them that Chamisa was in a meeting with the executive. The outcome would determine if the opposition alliance would go through with the election or boycott. Chamisa addressed the media after the meeting.
Contrary to the perception that we are going to boycott the election, we can't boycott our victory. We can't boycott our mandate. We can't boycott the clear mandate we have been given by the people of Zimbabwe.
This comes just as the alliance hit a brick wall when police refused to authorize planned vigils outside Zimbabwe Electoral Commission offices across the country in a fresh bid to pressure the commission. Chamisa's demands focus on transparency in the commission's operation. These include a voter's roll with pictures, monitoring of the printing of the ballot paper, and many other issues. In recent weeks, Chamisa has said while they will not boycott the election, there will be no balloting without reforms.
I am a leader who is democratic. I consult those whom I lead. I pushed for the reforms. We are still pushing for the reforms. Even if the reforms are not there, my view is that I would not accept anything less than the reforms. But the view of the people is that Mr. Chamisa lead us to Canaan, lead us to victory, lead us to a new Zimbabwe.
Munyara Dzidodo is the editor of Open Parli, an online publication that covers parliament and other political developments.
I think MDC is caught in between a rock and a hard place. The elections provisionally, by the law of the land, says that nothing can stop these elections from happening. It's a good thing that they've decided to go forth and participate. It's good for them that they go into this election with a mobilized base that can be ready to defend the vote if need be.
Former UN Secretary General Kofi Annan, who led a delegation of the elders in the country, recently said politicians should not make unreasonable demands. Although he did not mention names, the state media and other critics feel he was speaking about Chamisa. The Commonwealth Observer Mission here says it wants all political parties to be treated fairly, and there is nothing like unreasonable demands in the build-up to an election. For VOA, this is Kudzai Zvinovashi from Harare.
Also, Zimbabwe's July 30th elections are generally expected to be a slugfest between the two major political parties, the ruling ZANU-PF and the MDC alliance led by Nelson Chamisa. Over 130 political parties are contesting in these elections, which have 23 presidential candidates. One of the most controversial parties is the Mkhwazi Republican Party, or MRP. It operates more or less like a pressure group, fronting the causes of what it calls the marginalized people of Matabeleland. VOA correspondent Addie Gondo has more from Bulawayo.
Formed in 2013, the Mkhwazi Republican Party is one of the most vocal and controversial parties in Zimbabwean politics. It pushes for the division of Zimbabwe along ethnic lines. Party members want a separate state of Mkhwazi forged out of what is now called Midlands and Matabeleland. It mobilizes members using a variety of grievances led by what's known as the Gukurahundi massacres in the region in the 1980s. During that period, thousands of people, mostly Ndebele speakers, died as ZANU-PF paged what it saw as internal threats. MRP also complains that the ruling ZANU-PF party and the dominant Shona community marginalize people in Matabeleland when it comes to employment and political power. Butler Tambo, a political analyst, says that while as a whole, Zimbabweans do not want to see voters drawn along ethnic lines, the MRP's tactics have some appeal in the region.
What we have to notice about the Mthwakazi way of campaigning, pulling voters along ethnic lines, is something that we are not in support of as Zimbabweans. But I think what we should look at mostly are the root causes of why they have to campaign along those tribal or ethnic lines. I think it is mostly because the people in Matabeleland, they felt that they've been marginalized from Zimbabwe. So now these are now people who are having an agenda that is stronger than the national agenda, where people believe that they should also be considered in whatever happens in Zimbabwe. But not only that, but these are people who are now saying that they do not want to be part of Zimbabwe. But I think it's a very difficult agenda to push, and I do not necessarily see them succeeding.
Some political analysts see the MRP strategy as potentially dangerous given the track record in African politics with such events as the Rwandan genocide. Mike Omtlanga, with the Leaders for Africa Network, sees ethnic hatred driving the MRP platform. He says the party is dominated by old hatreds because of the Gukurahundi, which, he says, was more about politics than ethnicity.
But tribe found itself being part of political dissent. Hence, Mthwakazi Republic Party as a secessionist group is a reactionary group that is seeking to address past horrors in a political manner. Their remedy for that problem is misdirected because it doesn't really address the problem.
MRP leader Nkondi Simoyo, however, says the only way to solve the problem of marginalization is secession.
We have tried to coexist with people whom I would call our neighbors from Mashonaland, but each and every time they treat us as a second-class citizens, which is a realization by them that we don't belong to this country as per the setup of 1980 and probably as from 1923. But we feel that if this arrangement was to be done in a correct manner, it's a matter of saying, okay, let them stay where they are, and we stay where they are, and we coexist as neighbors. And we are simply saying this thing should be redressed peacefully.
MRP has 34 National Assembly candidates and 96 council candidates. Its leaders are hoping that with this election, they will have laid the ground for secession in the future. Reporting for VOA, this is Adi Gondo.
China's President Xi Jinping is joining the leaders of Brazil, Russia, India, and South Africa in Johannesburg today for the annual BRICS summit. On the way, he stopped in Senegal and Rwanda. Paul Nantulia, a specialist in Africa-China ties at the Africa Center for Strategic Studies in Washington, says the tour is part of Beijing's effort to build more complex ties in Africa. Nantulia told my colleague, Kate Pound Dawson, that China's communist revolutionary leaders in the 1960s supported Africa's liberation movements, but in the 1980s, China began to see Africa as an economic partner. Now, as a wealthy power, China wants to establish deeper relationships.
As China's economy expands, some in China argue that China is an established global power. This comes with all sorts of demands, and it comes with a different way of thinking about power and thinking about influence. So we see this argument, basically these different schools of thought within China that are basically evaluating and constantly re-evaluating China's position in the world. So China is growing as a rising, and that comes with expanding interest.
Western nations have mixed views about China's presence on the continent. Nantulia says some see it as reducing Western influence, but he says some policymakers see it more positively.
So, for instance, if you look at the U.S.-China relationship on the issue of Japan, you know, North Korea, on the issue of the South China Sea, the relationship is very, very tricky, and it's laden with a lot of conflict. But if you look at the sort of the triangular U.S.-China-Africa relationship, there's a view, there's an emerging view that China's engagement in Africa can be an opportunity for the U.S. and China to improve their relationship in a non-controversial area.
And African nations' views also are divided. On the whole, Nantulia says governments welcome China in part because it brings money for development projects. Beijing typically doesn't impose conditions regarding governance, human rights, or environmental protection on its aid or loans, which Western governments often do. But many African citizens are less welcoming.
You have a, in places like Lesotho and Zambia, where you have a significant presence of Chinese expats, you know, in Uganda and other places, there's a sense that that they're displacing African labor. They're displacing it. They're depressing it. They're flooding African markets with cheap goods from China and basically making it impossible for indigenous business to thrive and develop.
That was Paul Nantulia, a researcher at the Africa Center for Strategic Studies in Washington. He was speaking with VOA's Kate Pound Dawson. South African authorities are struggling to control an upsurge in violence in the minibus taxi industry. The country is reeling after several deadly attacks. Two drivers have died in the past few days as a result of feuding industry associations. This past weekend, 11 people linked to a Gauteng taxi association were slain in KwaZulu-Natal. The victims were traveling home from a funeral when they were attacked. The dispute centers around lucrative transport routes. Police were given a 72-hour deadline to make arrests, but that time is quickly running out. Nadia Same reports from Johannesburg.
The South African Parliament is warning that violence has reached crisis levels. In the past few days alone, 13 taxi drivers have been murdered as a result of rivalry. It's been a terrifying time for commuters, millions of whom rely on taxis to get around. Theo Malele from the National Taxi Alliance, which represents drivers, explains the problems.
The reasons are precipitated by, you know, oversaturation of routes, where one, you know, more than one association have been given the right to operate a particular route, and also they could be of a personal nature amongst two people in a particular association, while some may be about two different associations fighting over a route.
In an incident in KwaZulu-Natal this past weekend, 11 people died on the scene when the vehicle they were traveling in was ambushed by an unknown number of gunmen. Another person later died in hospital. Their vehicle was riddled with 255 bullet holes. Ironically, they were traveling home from the funeral of a driver who was also killed in taxi violence. South Africans have taken to social media expressing shock at the level of conflict and brazen nature of the crimes. Malele says his association has made recommendations to the government before in a bid to end the clashes, but he says the suggestions are gathering dust.
South African government must actually hold the ministers of transport accountable for all activities pertaining to the transport industry. Even the MECs in provinces like Gauteng, they should also get off their comfort zones and roll up their sleeves and begin to work with the industry to make sure that we nip this in the bud. We appreciate that transformation has to begin with us, but those that lead us must also show us the way and begin not to behave like demigods and do what is expected of them.
Police are now appealing to the public for assistance, which may lead to the arrest of the perpetrators of the bloodshed. But several commuters at taxi ranks around Gauteng say they're terrified of speaking out as they fear for their lives. They also say they have no other reliable way of getting to work and home. For VOA, I'm Nadia Sami in Johannesburg.
You're You're listening to Africa News Tonight live on the following frequencies, 15, 580 and 6080 kilohertz on the Voice of America. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington. At 20 minutes past the hour, here's a recap of our top stories. Zimbabwe's main opposition hits a brick wall 5 days before the elections. China's President Xi Jinping joins the leaders of Brazil, Russia, India, and South Africa in Johannesburg today for the annual BRICS summit. And South African authorities struggle to control an upsurge in violence in the minibus taxi industry. For more news and information, visit our website at voaafrica.com. The Egyptian parliament has approved a law giving senior military officers immunity from prosecution for any actions taken during the unrest that followed the ouster of President Mohamed Morsi between July 2013 and June 2014. The Speaker of Parliament says if this is a discriminatory law, then it is a positive one that was discussed by legislators and has been approved on behalf of the Egyptian people. Mohamed Anwar al-Sadat is the former head of Parliament's Human Rights Committee. He told VOA's senior analyst Mohamed El-Shenawi that Egyptians are wondering why the law was passed.
I have raised a lot of question marks, which most of Egyptians who are following the politics, you know, intellectuals, party leaders. I was actually somehow also surprised, like many others, why we are doing this now, this kind of immunity. What does it mean for those who we don't know the names? Actually, the names has to be submitted by the president personally. For those, let's say, high-ranking officers from this time, as you mentioned, until the parliament was in sessions, or let's say was elected. So it's big question mark. Nobody knows exactly what is behind, who has been requesting this, why we are doing this.
So why should these senior officers need immunity if they did not commit any wrongdoing?
Any military officer or even a police officer who have been part of this, if they were doing what they have to do according to the law, based on true justice, I don't see reasons why should we immune them. They are dealing with a certain responsibility. So it's, again, a big question mark.
Speaker of the Egyptian Parliament said if this was a discriminatory law, then it is a positive discrimination that was discussed in the Parliament and got approved on behalf of the Egyptian people. Is that a reasonable justification?
Of course not. And I don't see this is a positive discrimination. I see very clear discrimination. To my opinion, I don't see a reason why. But those who are doing what they have to do as a duty or as a responsibility, they should not be immune because, I mean, it doesn't make sense, you know. But again, there was no real discussion in the parliament. It was just a law passed in less than hours, and most of the parliamentarians, they were not aware about it.
Instead of watching the performance of the executive branch, the Egyptian parliament seems to back every decision taken by the president and his cabinet. How do you explain that?
Well, honestly, the way the parliament was structured from the very beginning, it was meant to be a kind of, let's say, a support institutions to the executive power. So we don't see any real practice of real parliamentarian works, accountability, questioning, holding responsibility for whoever in the government. We don't see this happening now. Of course, they have justifications that the country is under threat and this conspiracy and terrorism. So, you know, they are justifying that there is no time for having the parliamentarians to use the responsibility where most of Egyptians were expecting to see, that they speak for them, that they hold the government accountable. So I personally don't expect much from this parliament, same as many Egyptians. They don't see that the parliament speaks for them. They believe that the parliament speaks for the government.
Mohamed Almar Al-Sadat is the former head of parliament's Human Rights Committee. He spoke with VOA's Mohamed El-Shenawi. Shops and banks closed today in Timbuktu as protesters fired shots in the air and burned vehicles in the latest violence to hit Mali ahead of Sunday's presidential election. Amid growing safety concerns in the region, Arab youths claim they are mistreated by security forces. No casualties were reported, but Reuters reported the mayor called the situation deplorable. Armed groups who claim to represent a variety of quarreling communities took over parts of the north in 2012. French forces intervened and pushed them back, but scattered attacks have continued. The United Nations says nearly 300 civilians have been killed so far this year in communal violence. The airport in the capital of Mopti State was hit by shelling Sunday night. No injuries were reported. A branch of Al-Qaeda set off a car bomb at the headquarters of a new West African counter-terror force late last month, killing five people. Hundreds of schools have been closed due to security fears, and the election may not be held in some parts of the country. And that wraps up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. For listeners on VOA's Nairobi FM station, please stay tuned for the Swahili Evening News coming up at 16:30 UTC. For all other listeners, please stay tuned to the Sunny Side of Sports. Tune in again at 1800 UTC for another edition of Africa News Tonight. On behalf of our producer, Bill Workinger, and our engineer, Suleiman Terawali, thanks for choosing the Voice of America.
Hello, this is Shaka Sali, host of Straight Talk Africa. The Voice of America's Straight Talk Africa puts you in touch with newsmakers and experts as they talk about the most important social and political issues that affect you. Tune in Wednesdays at 18:30 UTC right here on VOA Africa.
Are you wandering around lost in a musical desert? Well, follow your ears to the fantastic, the one and only African Music Mix on The Voice of America. Bathe yourself in this musical oasis. From the north to the south and from the east to the west, the African Music Mix plays only the best.
Yes, sir. Tune in at 200, 300, 1200, and 1300 UTC GMT. Every day, right here on VOA Africa.
Hello, Africa. This is James Butte, host of Voice of America's Daybreak Africa. Join me Monday through Friday at 3, 4, 5, and 6 hours UTC for the latest in Africa news, features, and sports. We are also available on the internet at www.voaafrica.com. That's Daybreak Africa, your breakfast show on the Voice of America.
Hey, sports fans, brighten your day by tuning in to the Sunny Side of Sports Monday through Friday at 1630 and 1830 UTC. Join us on Facebook at facebook.com/VOA Sunny and on Twitter at VOA Sunny Sports. Or check out the blog at blogs.voanews.com/Sunny. It's the Sunny Side of Sports right here on the Voice of America.